VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. The U.S. Congress formally certified President-elect Donald Trump's election victory on Monday, the four-year anniversary of the January 6th Capitol riot. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Donald Trump's election victory was formally certified on Monday.
For President of the United States,
Vice President Kamala Harris presided over the joint session of Congress, clearing the way for her former election rival to be sworn in as president later this month.
Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 312 votes.
The ceremony stood in sharp contrast to exactly 4 years ago, when Trump supporters stormed the Capitol in a failed attempt to block the certification of his loss.
Well, today was obviously a very important day.
Harris spoke to reporters after she said she performed her constitutional duties.
One of the most important pillars of our democracy is that there will be a peaceful transfer of power.
On January 6, 2021, rioters surged past police barricades, assaulting about 140 officers and causing more than $2.8 million in damage. Multiple police officers who battled protesters died in the weeks that followed, some by suicide. Trump continues to falsely claim that his 2020 defeat was the result of widespread fraud. He has said he plans to pardon some of those charged with taking part in the riot. Security inside and outside the Capitol was heightened on Monday, with snowy Capitol grounds ringed by metal fences and checkpoints. The boosted security is expected to remain in place through Trump's inauguration on January 20th.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. This is VOA News. The presence of Israeli troops who entered a UN buffer zone on the border with Syria following the fall of President Bashar al-Assad is frustrating the local population. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
Syrians living in the windswept buffer zone on the border with Israel tell the Associated Press they have been left to fend for themselves since Israeli troops rolled in after the collapse of the Assad regime. In Qunitra, Israeli tanks maneuver behind a mound of dirt blocking the road to the house where Renata Fastas lives. She says she's frustrated by a lack of action or communication by the fledgling government or the international community. Troops have reportedly opened fire on Syrian protesters on at least two occasions. In Suisa, east of the Golan Heights, Abdul Subai al-Ali sat with his 21-year-old son, who was recovering after being shot in the stomach in a protest on Christmas Day. He says the country is not ready to start a war, but they demand a solution to this issue. Syria's new de facto leader, Ahmad el-Sharaa, has publicly said Syria is not seeking a military conflict with Israel. I'm Jennifer King.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced on Monday that he will step down after nearly a decade in office. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino reports.
I intend to resign as party leader, as prime minister, after the party selects its next leader.
Trudeau was facing mounting pressure, including from Liberal legislators, to quit amid polls showing the party will be crushed in the next election. Trudeau also said Parliament would be suspended until March 24th. The 53-year-old Trudeau took office in November 2015 and won re-election twice, making him one of Canada's longest-serving prime ministers. But he saw his popularity dip 2 years ago as public anger over high prices and a housing shortage grew. The next election must be held by late October, regardless of who the leader is. Parliament was due to return this month, and opposition parties had vowed to bring down the government as soon as they could.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. The first U.S. bird flu death has been reported. Health officials in the state of Louisiana announced the death on Monday of a person who had been hospitalized with severe respiratory symptoms. Health officials have said the person was older than 65, had underlying medical problems, and had been in contact with sick and dead birds in a backyard flock. They also said a genetic analysis had suggested the bird flu virus had mutated inside the patient, which could have led to the more severe illness. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. Congress certifies Trump election win.
This duty is a sacred obligation, one I will uphold, guided by love of country, loyalty to our Constitution, and my unwavering faith in the American people.
In Uganda, the trial of prominent opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye resumes today in a military court. Transportation and trade in the Guinean capital Conakry were disrupted on Monday due to a protest by an opposition alliance. Seychelles, a small nation of islands where big powers compete. Mozambique's opposition presidential candidate says he will return home from exile this Thursday no matter what.
He says he's returning because people are being killed, they're being persecuted by the authorities here. So he says he's coming, he will be ready to be killed or arrested.
And the struggles by past U.S. presidents to downsize government. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Congress on Monday certified that President-elect Donald Trump won the 2024 election. 4 years ago, Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol to overturn the certification of Joe Biden's 2020 election win. The U.S. Congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
4 years after the most tumultuous certification of election results in U.S. history, a quiet and orderly process Monday, as the U.S. Congress certifies that Donald Trump won the 2024 election. The new Senate Majority Leader John Thune hailed the victory.
Republicans improved our margins in nearly 90% of counties in the United States and grew support with nearly every demographic group. The Republican coalition is broad and strong and growing. Now the work begins of delivering on our agenda. And, Mr. President, Republicans are ready to go.
Despite her loss to Trump, Vice President Kamala Harris fulfilled her constitutional duty of presiding over the certification of the election. Only two other sitting U.S. vice presidents have presided over electoral counts after their losses for the presidency: Richard Nixon in 1961 and Al Gore in 2001.
For president and vice president.
In a taped statement earlier Monday, Harris emphasized the importance of a peaceful transfer of power.
This duty is a sacred obligation, one I will uphold, guided by love of country, loyalty to our Constitution, and my unwavering faith in the American people.
One analyst told VOA that duty is part of a long tradition of American leaders respecting the democratic process. Casey Burgett is the director of the Legislative Affairs Program at the George Washington University.
This is her role to play, that she's going to carry it out purposefully and as intended. And that just shows the commitment to a peaceful transfer of power, even and especially if you are the one on the losing end of the election. It shows a strength and a commitment to these ideals, something that we've taken for granted for too long and now need to return to.
But congressional Democrats say January 6, 2021 should not be forgotten. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Far too many individuals have tried to rewrite the history of January 6th, have tried to sweep the truth under the rug and pretend like the day was perfectly fine or even a moment of great patriotism. That is a lie, plain and simple.
In 2022, a congressional committee composed of seven Democrats and two Republicans placed the blame for January 6th on Trump for repeating lies about election fraud and allegedly inciting supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol.
Because we are not fair-weather patriots.
But Trump and many of his supporters have criticized the work of the committee as biased and suggested criminal defendants in January 6th cases should be pardoned. Trump will be sworn in for his second term as president on January 20th. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations says more than 30 million people, over half of them children, are in need of aid in Sudan after 20 months of war. The UN's humanitarian agency OCHA told the Security Council on Monday that unprecedented international assistance is needed to address the crisis. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, renewed a call for collective action in imposing sanctions on individuals and organizations whose actions have worsened the Sudan conflict.
This report only reaffirms what we already know. Sudan is experiencing one of the greatest human crises, not only of the day, but our lifetime. We can quiver over what we call it, but none of us can quiver over the fact that people are suffering in Sudan. Over 500,000 people, including children, are struggling to survive. 12 million people have fled their homes due to fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. And now, as a result of 20 months of brutal civil war, over half of Sudan's population is acutely food insecure. The Sudanese authorities' decision to suspend their collaboration with the IPC system and impede international efforts to provide humanitarian assistance and prevent starvation is simply unacceptable. We urge the Transitional Sovereign Council to immediately re-engage with the IPC and take affirmative steps to address the widespread food insecurity. In addition, both military factions must facilitate the establishment of humanitarian hubs to support the flow of aid and cease all diversions and theft of it. Both the SAF and RSF have failed to meet their commitments under the 2023 Jeddah Declaration to allow and facilitate the rapid and unimpeded passage of humanitarian aid and to protect humanitarian workers.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield speaking Monday at the Security Council in New York. Mozambique's opposition presidential candidate Venancio Mondlane says he will return home from exile this Thursday, January 9th, regardless of whether the authorities would arrest him or not. This comes as President-elect Daniel Chapo is set to be sworn in on January 15. Mondlane led deadly protests against the October 9 presidential elections, describing the results as fraudulent. He fled the country, saying that he feared for his life. Adriano Nuvunga is the chairman of the Mozambique Human Rights Defenders Network. He tells me that Mondlane's announced return comes as a surprise because his supporters were expecting him to announce the next phase of the post-election protests.
We were all taken by surprise yesterday to listen to him in a well-attended live from his Facebook meeting to say that he is returning. He says he's returning because people are being killed, they're being persecuted by the authorities here because they want him. So he says he's coming, he will be ready to be killed or arrested, which is a kind of unexpected move from him. But it seems that a lot has been going below the table vis-a-vis the political party that was supporting him, as they have made it public that they will take their seats in parliament. That has been framed as treason.
So you say that you were all surprised because just last week he was supposed to give a speech, but postponed the speech to talk about the next phase of the protest. Is that why people are surprised, or were they expecting for the protest to continue?
The surprise is very much speaking to that number one, he was in the momentum of actually laying out the next phase of demonstrations. He had labeled it the spearhead phase, which is the final stage of the demonstrations towards his inauguration, as you were saying. So he was in that mood, in that momentum. Then, as you clearly said, he postponed the detailing of that on technical issues. And then yesterday he says he's coming back. So it seems that there's something happening behind the scenes that people have no clue what it is. But definitely he said to be coming back and he seemed not to be in the mood of someone who is in the momentum of coming for the inauguration, as you are saying. Now he seems to have a different tone, a tone of somebody who is returning to what might do something that he might not even know how the authorities will react to that.
Now, you mentioned the opposition members of parliament. Did you say that they have accepted to be in the government?
Yes. The Podemos party leader publicly said that there are 40-plus MPs. They will be inaugurated on the 12th, as we know. And there has been a public outcry, people labeling Forquilla as a traitor for somebody who, in fact, was given a ride by Venancio Mondlane, and now he is now kind of sidelining him, signing deals with Frelimo to take their seats in parliament, and people are not happy about that.
So before I let you go, what is the mood in the country about the inauguration?
What we see in the public domain is kind of twofold. On the one hand, you have a mood, social media, everywhere. People are not happy with the fact that Chapo is going to be inaugurated.
Adriano Novoga is the chairman of the Mozambique Human Rights Defenders Network. He spoke with me from the Mozambican capital, Maputo. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bhatti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 7th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Uganda, the trial of prominent opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye resumes in a military court today, Tuesday. Besigye and his co-accused face charges of illegal possession of firearms in Kenya, Greece, and Switzerland. Both have denied the charges. Defense lawyers condemn the trial being held at a military court, which they contend lacks jurisdiction since their clients are civilians. For the latest developments regarding the charges, viewers Peter Clotty reached Kato Tumusimi, a member of Besigye's defense team.
When we first appeared in the court martial, we raised issues that were regarding to lack of jurisdiction of the court martial to try Colonel Dr. Besigye and Haji Abed Rutari. We are still waiting to receive that ruling, but we could not receive it at the time because our legal team had not been fully constituted. So one of the businesses that we have in that court martial tomorrow is to receive the ruling on whether the court martial has the jurisdiction to try Dr. Colonel Besigye and Haji Abed Rutari on offenses allegedly related to security or possession of guns. In this case, where the accused people are civilian, that's one. Point number two is that whether the court martial has the jurisdiction to try civilians on offenses allegedly committed in Kenya, Nairobi, so as and Athens in Switzerland and then Geneva. These are the questions that we raised in our preliminary objection before the court martial. So we wait to receive that ruling and then we can get the way forward tomorrow.
With the constitution of the legal team representing Dr. Besigye and the ruling that will temporarily grant Martha Karua as part of this case, how significant is this development and what impact do you think this will have in the process?
This is an international case on offenses allegedly committed on a different territory, on a different country, on a different republic, which is Kenya. And the people allegedly involved in the committing of the offense are unlawfully kidnapped and brought back to Uganda, and then they're being tried in Uganda on offenses allegedly committed in Athens, in Geneva, and also Kenya. And what you need to understand is that the reason as why Dr. Besigye and his colleague at Haji Abed Rutari traveled to Kenya were on an invitation by Honorable Martha Karua only, her book launch. So that one can bring up the gist that Honorable Martha Karua, who is a senior counsel now here, who understands the dynamics of the politics and the legal framework of East Africa and Kenya as a whole, where the abduction took place, has a key important role to play in this trial in the general court martial. Regarding that, he has all the details relating to the alleged commission of the offense, who actually participated in the abduction and the kidnap of the two accused people, and therefore we need her as somebody who has experienced as a former Minister of Justice in Kenya, as a senior counsel in East Africa, which is the common law country, and the same common law that governs us here in Uganda. So she has a role to play as a senior and a lead lawyer.
What are your expectations of the resumption of the case on Tuesday?
Since we are almost 90% sure that our legal team is fully constituted, we shall receive a ruling. But unfortunately, we cannot tell whether the ruling will be in our favor or not our favor. Therefore, when we get the ruling, whether in our favor or not in our favor, then we shall get the next way forward. But we are right up to speed on how to proceed with the case, whether the ruling is not in our favor. If it is in our favor and they give a ruling that they have no jurisdiction to try civilian in the court martial, or that they have no jurisdiction to try people on offenses allegedly committed on a different territory, then our clients will be freed with unconditional, and that's our prayer.
Keto Tumusiimi is a member of Uganda opposition leader Chisa Besigye's defense team. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty. Transportation and trade in the Guinean capital, Conakry, were disrupted on Monday due to a protest by an opposition alliance calling for the military junta to return the country to democratic rule. The French news agency AFP said Guinean authorities had banned the protest since Sunday because they had not been notified about it. Military leader Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya announced in a New Year's Day speech that he will return the country to civilian rule in 2025. Daouda Mohamed Kamara is the editor-in-chief at Espace FM. He tells me that the political parties said they stopped recognizing the military junta's authority as of December 31, 2024.
A week ago, the political leaders called the citizens to start protesting the military junta from this 6th of January. That means we are protesting against the military junta from the 31st of December 2024. They are saying that the accord they signed with ECOWAS, it was to end the transition at the end of the December month. That means from the 31st of December to now, they won't recognize these authorities anymore.
My understanding is that the military leader, General Mamadi Doumbouya, announced in a New Year's Day speech that political activities will resume in 2025. If that is the case, why are the political parties protesting?
The political parties are not protesting against the last speech given by Mamadi Doumbouya. They are protesting about the engagement that he took before the ECOWAS, that the transition will be end December 2024. And because of that, they are not doing that. They are not running any action that going on that way. That's why today the political leaders are standing to protest against the non-respect of the award given to the ECOWAS. That's why they are protesting today.
What is the impact of this protest on the lives of ordinary Guineans?
Yes, of course. All the activities are paralyzed in the capital city, Conakry, here. There's no transportation as usual, and also the market from stores we are locked to today, from Amdalai to Simanturi, I can say. Some shops we are locked, and the markets are not going on. So the little boys are on the streets with the, how they call it, the military forces, the police and the gendarme. At this moment, they are still on streets protesting. What we are hearing that a boy received a bullet today at Tewit, that means at Somfonia, and also some people are telling us that another guy received a bullet at Bomboli, but that is not confirmed yet. Let me say the activities are paralyzed really in the capital city.
Daouda Mohamed Kamara is the editor-in-chief at Espace FM. He was speaking with me from Guinea's capital, Conakry. The small island nation of Seychelles off the coast of Africa has become the unlikely setting of a great power rivalry. China has been making diplomatic inroads for years, while the U.S. has only recently returned to the strategic Indian Ocean archipelago. Kate Butler traveled to the island of Mahé in the Seychelles for more on what China and the U.S. are doing to win the hearts of the residents there.
The islands of Seychelles are not only picture-perfect for honeymooners, they've also long attracted global superpowers.
We do notice that there are various powers, various countries, wanting to, woo us. Seychelles has made the decision that there will never be a military base on its territory, a foreign military base.
The archipelago's strategic position in the Indian Ocean, east of Africa, and south of the Gulf States has been of interest to countries such as the U.S., India, and China from the past to the present day. In 1963, during the Cold War, the U.S. built a tracking station on the main island of Mahé to monitor Russian satellites. 73-year-old island resident Paul Chow remembers the Americans when they were stationed on the island.
I was the head of the basketball, local island basketball team, and we used to play against the technicians at the tracking station.
Then, in the 90s, several years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the U.S. closed its embassy here and shut down the tracking station a month later. Almost three decades later, at a time when U.S.-China competition is heating up, Washington, once again, has set its eyes on Seychelles.
The reopening of the embassy underscores the importance that the United States places on the partnership that we have with Seychelles.
The Chinese embassy in Mahé declined a request for an interview. But in the years of Washington's absence, China has been making diplomatic gains in Seychelles. It sent doctors and built hospitals, affordable housing, the parliament, and the courts, all for free. China also gifted the state television company a new building.
The difference is that China's support to Seychelles is tangible. You can see them. You don't see the support that the U.S. provides it.
Rather than building buildings, we're building capacity. And wherever we can help to provide input and expertise, whether it is on drug trafficking or the legal system or police force, we're happy to do that. And that's where we see really making an investment. You're planting seeds for the future. It's again, not the same thing as a building, but we believe that it's an even more important contribution to make.
But that may not be enough to capture the hearts of some residents here.
China helps the Seychelles a lot. So people generally have a very positive view of China. But whereas maybe the U.S., they left back in the 90s, so we don't really get in touch with Americans that much.
While some residents fear their country is being used as a pawn in the geopolitical power play, President Wavell Ramkalawan's position is clear.
Seychelles is not part of this. We will receive Chinese warships in port, Indian warships, European warships, U.S. warships, because we are friends with everyone.
With two-thirds of the world's oil shipments passing through, the Indian Ocean is a key waterway, which keeps Seychelles on the map for geopolitical rivals, such as China and the U.S., as they compete for influence here. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Mahé, Seychelles.
Malawi police on Monday arrested the country's ex-finance minister, Joseph Mwanabika, and four other former government officials for allegedly embezzling the equivalent of around $250 million at two state-owned companies. According to the French news agency AFP, the officials are alleged to have stolen about $258 million at the Salima Sugar Company and Greenbelt Initiative. In a statement, Malawi police spokesperson Peter Kalaya said the arrests follow a 2023 audit of the Salima Sugar Company that revealed huge amounts of misused funds. All five will be presented before a competent court of law once police have finished taking their statements, the police noted. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James.